Welcome to RegTalks, the podcast dedicated to the latest trends from the world of RegTech, FinTech, and financial regulations. My name is Klaus Christensen, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of award-winning RegTech provider Know Your Customer. Today, it's my great pleasure to welcome Ben Parker as my guest. Ben is Chief Executive Officer and founder of eFlow Global, one of the world's other leading RegTech providers. Ben is an expert in financial services regulation and has a wide range of experience in tackling market abuse and developing the latest advances in trading surveillance. Recognizing the growing regulatory pressures that compliance professionals are facing, Ben's mission at eFlow is to create a new standard for digital infrastructure that can allow businesses to get one step ahead. Ben joined the company in 2004 as COO and most recently led eFlow's Series A funding round of £7 million. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today and for opening our new season of RegTalks with me.
Thanks for having me, Klaus. It's a pleasure.
To start, tell me a bit about eFlow Global and your journey as founder and CEO.
Yeah, sure. So as you said, 2004 was when we started the business. So we've just celebrated our 20th anniversary. My journey started in risk systems in actually German Landesbanks, a couple of them. And we formed in 2004 off the back of some of the challenges that I'd experienced personally in that space. And at the time, I brought in two family members, actually, mother and brother, and we came from different areas of the same market. Well, actually, my brother was CTO at an insurance with Marsh in Australia. And we combined our efforts. We acquired a platform that we'd recently developed and actually sold. We brought all of that IP back, and we started our journey in trade lifecycle management. And then if you sort of look at the journey of eFlow, it's pretty much split into two. There's the pre-RegTech life, and then there's the post-RegTech life. So before that, as I mentioned, we were sort of half professional services and trade lifecycle management, and then sort of post-journey, which I'm sure we'll talk about today, is as a RegTech solely business.
Very interesting. I noticed, first of all, congratulations for the 20 years. Like, I always think of us as veterans by now of 8-9 years, but that is impressive. And I noticed you started as COO and then changed into CEO later. I always wonder, did we miss out at KYC for not having a chief operating officer? Because we don't currently. And I'm really wondering about that. And the other question really is, was it difficult to transition? Were you able to let go of operational stuff with the change, or are you still doing that as well?
That's an interesting question, because I think that I almost went back into that COO role when we moved to the sort of RegTech business, and I had to learn that release of control and delegation and everything again, because we haven't changed the business model since then as well. We're a cloud solution these days rather than on-prem. So it was a different mindset. And actually, in fact, I feel like I'm having to do that again as we scale up after the Series A. So it's, in answer to your question, it's interesting. It's something I wouldn't necessarily reflect on, but it's something I've had to do three times within my journey with eFlow. Two as going back into the COO role, and now as CEO and delegating. And actually, we operate almost without a COO these days, with very strong sort of department heads in place. And I think that with the CEO role anyway, that there are some blurred lines, and we see a number of times it's a normal career transition from a COO position to CEO as well. And frankly, I prefer that than from the CFO position to the CEO as well.
Well, it is a learning journey for all of us. And I think that's the thing that keeps us interested and keeps us getting up every morning. I saw that as a constant with most of my guests. We're both in the RegTech space, and I'll talk about my reasons, but why did you decide to focus on RegTech in the first place? Was it an accident, or did you, like, from the very beginning, see this opportunity?
Yeah, I think that where we were operating in a sort of middle office space, there was a natural inclination to go to RegTech anyway. And it was very much like a bolt-on offering that we had in the early days. But we also had a vision at the time to move to sort of more purely tech, and then ultimately further down the line in the advent of cloud solutions, we wanted to move to the cloud. We wanted to be scalable, and we saw that as an opportunity to scale. And there was an adoption, certainly a resistance in the capital markets area that we're in, to move core business functions, of which trade lifecycle was one of them, to a cloud solution. And we found that there was actually great traction to move the RegTech offerings that we had to in that direction. It was It was well timed for us post 2008 and the adoption of regulation globally. It's not just us, it's across the market. And so we saw the opportunity there to expand that offering and move in that direction to cloud deployed solutions. And it ultimately comes down to where is the data housed, and you know, some of the capital markets were very behind the times in terms of what they thought data security was. But certainly from a RegTech perspective, they were happy for that to be cloud.
Yeah. I think the capital markets were always very early in using technology. Anywhere where there's large streams of money involved, that totally makes sense. And they have been advanced. Actually, in our area, I always felt that KYC, especially business entity verification, was always a bit behind the curve. And it took a while longer, hence the later starting date for us. Because when we started, we were still early. In our area. Yeah, it's a different journey there. But yeah, same conclusion. One of the first decisions we made in 2015 in KYC was on setting up our solution in the cloud rather than traditional on-prem deployments. At an even earlier time, you seem to have come to the exact same conclusion that that's the right thing. What do you see as the benefits that cloud technology has brought to RegTech?
Well, it's allowed significant numbers of players into the market. It's not just the reserve of the big tech firms with infinite resources. So, and I'm sure that you found that as well. So you're easily able to deploy. It gives the markets or our client base options in terms of best of breed technology. So they're not stuck with the big traditional names. And I think that certainly from a growth perspective, when we're looking at our own benefits, the scale that we can put on our products and the speed with which we can release them, we can grow. And ultimately, and I think this comes back to sort of anywhere within the RegTech market, the concept of cross-border or cross-market regulation, it facilitates that a lot easier than traditional sort of on-prem solutions as well.
Yeah. Well, I think for us, cloud was a great equalizer because we were able to build solutions with the cloud technology in 2015 that were as good or better than on-prem solutions offered by the very big established players in the scene. And I think that is an amazing side effect of this technology that a lot of people can build now very, very interesting components. And also the interoperability of cloud technology, because they're immediately set up in a space that is by definition out there and can communicate with others, is a great starting point. But you mentioned cross-border. That's actually interesting because we also focus on cross-border opportunities in many ways. Our solution is especially good for users, for banks, financial institutions that are set up in a way that they need cross-border verifications. Mm-hmm. Cross-border regulation is known to be diverse. What are some of the challenges that you see? And what are your thoughts on regulators working together towards a more unified approach?
Well, I think that in Europe, you obviously have the overarching ESMA, so the European Securities Market Authority, and that does provide, you know, one would say there is no border within Europe, and potentially that is the case, but that you still have the local NCAs within each country within Europe. And so that overarching authority does allow for less friction in order to implement cross-border regulation. But what we're actually seeing is that within our space, within regulatory reporting, within OTC derivatives trading, for instance, there is a harmonization across border within Singapore, Australia, and Europe as well, in terms of using the same unique product identifiers, which has traditionally been an issue when reporting and surveilling OTC products and derivative products. So that's a great step in that direction in terms of disparate regulators that aren't necessarily under one arm, overarching, working together to actually harmonize and provide a global structure there. So that's sort of one example. You know, the challenges are many, and they have to look after their own interests as well. But certainly, I don't think we would have had that collaboration or at least alignment if we were looking back 10, 15 years ago when we started out.
Funnily enough, I would say, again, anti-money laundering, the AML space is behind the curve there. There is some corporation. And certainly in Europe, you would think we have one regulator, basically the European Council issued the AML directives, number 4, 5, 6 now. But they are transposed into national laws, sometimes a bit differently. And so the national regulations in each member state still diverge a bit. For example, in verification of individuals with video, two-way video required in some member states, but not in others, that sort of thing. We'd hope that that accelerates to a more unified approach with the new AML authority that's being established. Yeah. But internationally, even though everything is under the FATF oversight, yeah, is still very diverse. I tend to see it as an opportunity for us because we do cover it already. And it's a kind of difficulty for new market entrants to deal with that. Yeah.
Why do you think that they do that? Is that because of the lack of access to the right technology in those regions?
No, I think it is really more philosophical differences in the approach. Like if you look at the global thing, the European thing is, I think that's just history that takes a while to shake itself out. But internationally, it's definitely different approaches. For example, in the US, there is an AML UBO authority now, a UBO database that they established under the new rules, but that is private. Nobody has access except law enforcement and under some circumstances, banks, but no outsider can see all that. That is because of philosophical differences between the regulatory regimes. In the US, who owns a corporate structure is nobody's business except that person's, that company's. In Europe, we decided for transparency. Transparency as a good thing and the light of transparency eradicating all sorts of problems. And I think, yeah, those differences shake out in regulations nowadays. But yeah, we'll deal with those. No.
It's interesting you say that because we find there's similar challenges in the US. Now they are, when it comes to, and you use the word transparency, and that's very appropriate. So it's, the MiFID regulation is applicable to us in Europe. And, you know, that is about transparency in markets. And in the US, there is, certainly in the surveillance space, there is a move towards greater transparency, but it has been almost a cloak that transparency is bad for business and therefore that it's been behind the curve, but we actually are seeing that there is more alignment in the US market under SEC and FINRA in our space. And that's why it's a good growth opportunity for us in going forward.
Well, again, it is both a challenge and an opportunity, as always. Yeah. We do have to talk a little bit about AI. I don't know. Yesterday, we all saw another slew of releases from OpenAI. It's just amazing the speed of development currently in the whole AI world, especially in generative AI. What do you think about the impact of AI in the regulatory space?
I think that there is clearly it's going to be an asset to the regulatory space. You know, we're all looking for optimization of automation. Ultimately, it has to be used as doing the heavy lifting. It can't be. We talk about the type of black box scenario when certainly when we're looking at surveillance and behavioral analytics, etc. You know, we're not trying to automate the decision making. It has to have that human element, the sign off, so that we don't have algorithms running amok. But we're actually involved in an AI tech sprint with a particular regulator at the moment. I probably can't say too much about it, but it's interesting that is being very much vendor-led. So it's being led by academics and the market rather than necessarily the regulator themselves. So it's from their perspective, I almost feel like they know that it has to be adopted, but they also don't know how to get their arms around it. And they're looking for the market and those that have been in the market. And potentially, you can't really say that there's many AI experts out there in the world, but they're looking to us to actually look at how it's being adopted within certainly our area of the market. And I know that we're not the only vertical in the reg tech space that has been invited to take part in these AI-specific tech sprints.
Yeah. We see limited initiatives from the regulators that we interface a lot with, MAS, HKMA, and the European ones. We see, obviously, an interest, but it's very, very careful in many ways. And I think that mirrors the approach in the banking sector in general. They look towards it, and they also do not want that black box approach where the machine makes all decisions and there's no accountability and no explainability for those decisions anymore. We've used in our KYC, we've used AI from the very beginning in 2016. And in like not so much headline grabbing way, but quietly, internally, very successfully. I think that's the right approach. If you can find the niche where it's effective, it can be extremely effective. But that said, I am really excited about the new generative AI capabilities in our space. We use AI to extract data from documents in some ways. Mm-hmm. It will move that to extract meaning from documents. And that is quite an interesting idea. Like I'm very positive about that.
Yeah. Well, our purpose is to reduce false positives and near misses, et cetera, when we're doing our analysis or surveillance, and where we're blending communications from chats, whether it be WhatsApp, instant message, voice to text, et cetera, where there's vast amounts of data. And without those sort of large models, you know, we're still in a rules-based approach. So it's, for us, it's a significant leap forward. We just have to make sure that we control and deploy it effectively, because what we don't want is that we go in the other direction and that we're creating more false positives than we're actually solving.
Yeah, that's true. One thing not affecting us at KYC so much, as we're currently focusing more on the traditional banking sector, is the upcoming MiCA regulation. That's different for you. What can you tell me about MiCA and the impact it will have in the US and Europe?
Yeah, well, MiCA obviously specifically will be biggest impact in Europe. It's the closest thing I can relate it to, again, is the MiFID regulation that we had. So in terms of the sort of timeline that we're looking at, it's come into effect for stable coins in June this year. There is a sort of a 2-year grandfathering period, and then next year it comes in for everything else. But from our perspective and the sort of market abuse space, we're still looking at the same things that we are with the MiFID regulation and market abuse regulation. We're looking at market manipulation, disclosure of inside information, the manipulation on those trading in crypto assets, you know, slight variations on that. So there is a period of watching and waiting and seeing what, you know, how we're going to adapt our tools and provide those solutions for the market and how those systems and controls work. But ultimately, for us, it's very similar to what we've done previously within the European Union and UK, because the UK will follow suit as well. What happens in the US is, from our perspective, still a gray area. Having said that, some of the biggest providers of crypto-related surveillance are actually based in the US. So they're almost creating the rule book there and then potentially see what the regulators do off the back of that. But from our perspective, we will apply what we've learned and what we're going to implement in the EU and UK to the North American market.
It feels like another quite significant step for the digital asset crypto scene to be moved towards mainstream trading. You think it's fair?
Absolutely. It's the biggest pan market regulation that we've had in the crypto space. And so it significantly is moving towards the mainstream. You know, we see that those even trading on retail platforms can access the crypto market as well. So it's, you know, it's democratizing trading again, but for crypto assets.
Well, exciting times. Thanks so much, Ben. I learned a lot again, and that's always what I'm looking for when I talk to people here on the podcast. Thanks for joining and hope to stay in touch.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Klaus, and likewise.
All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of Reg Talks. My name is Klaus Christensen, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of award-winning RegTech provider Know Your Customer. If you liked the episode, please subscribe to the whole series and leave us a review. And if you'd like to connect with us, suggest a guest or a topic for an upcoming episode, please send us a message at info@knowyourcustomer.com or visit knowyourcustomer.com/regtalks.